Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Don and Dude.
New is always better. That counts for all sorts of things, especially waves. This is the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. Got Don with me. Don, we got something special happening here today, don't we?
Yeah, well, I think this is kind of like the Beatles when they weren't getting along. They had to bring in people like Eric Clapton and
yes,
Billy Preston.
Yeah, our egos are out of control.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're doing things a little differently this week. We're going to explore new wave music, which I'm very excited about.
Of course.
But, you know, it's a hard concept to define. So we've brought in an expert, Steve, from the New Wave Music Podcast, who I've mentioned many times.
Oh, yeah. I feel insulted sometimes you bring it up. Yeah.
Steve, welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
And thanks, guys. I'm honored to be here. And Don, I'm great that you're such a super fan. So I created the New Wave Music Podcast about 5 years ago as a way to shine a spotlight on new albums that core new wave bands were still releasing. Since then, we've been fortunate enough to interview many of the classic icons of the new wave era. Today, the New Wave Music Podcast has become your go-to source for in-depth interviews, album reviews, and the latest music news from the world of New Wave. I discovered New Wave at a very early age. I think seeing the B-52s on Saturday Night Live was my first introduction.
Wow.
Since then, I kind of jumped into, obviously, early Depeche Mode, OMD, Devo, Talking Heads. That music immediately drew me in. As a New Wave sound evolved into eventually what's called classic alternative, it continued to connect with me, and that music really just speaks to my soul, and I have a passion for it, and wanted to share that and get that out with the podcast.
Awesome. So this is, of course, the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, talking about them, loving them. Just can't get enough. We're always learning, so we're going to be learning a little bit about New Wave today from Steve, and he's going to pick an album for us to discuss. And of course, Don's going to ask us a deep question. And then we'll have some shout-outs to some other albums and album-related items we're digging. New releases, things from our collections. And then we will spin the wheel of musical discovery to find out what kind of albums we'll be discovering next time. But this time, it's all about that new wave.
That's what I'm talking about!
New wave is a sound that started out in the late 70s, kind of as punk began to evolve. It's kept its punk rebellious spirit. New wave embraces also pop hooks, danceable rhythms, and of course the growing use of synthesizers. It's a broad style that ranges from guitar-driven acts like The Cars and Blondie to synth-focused bands like Depeche Mode, New Order, Tears for Fears, even eventually evolved into early Cure. It's more than just a sound. New wave represents a cultural movement, colorful, experimental, forward-thinking, shaping both the sound and styles of the 1980s.
Yeah, I mean, it's next phase, new wave. Dance craze. Anyway, still rock and roll to me. All right. The stage has been set. Definitions have been revealed. Now it's time, Steve, for your new wave album, Cha-Cha-Cha Choice.
You choose me?
So to jump into new wave, I picked one of my favorite bands, Oingo Boingo, and their album Dead Man's Party. So Dead Man's Party is the fifth studio album by Oingo Boingo. It was released back in October 1985, just in time for Halloween. The album became the band's most commercially successful release, cementing their reputation as one of the most innovative and theatrical acts to come out of the new wave era. Fronted by Danny Elfman, who would later go on to have a legendary career as a film composer, Oingo Boingo crafted an album that blended perfectly their quirky, horn-driven rock with a shadowy gothic edge. Dead Man's Party is best known for its title track, which remains a staple of all Halloween playlists, and Weird Science, which was written for the John Hughes film of the same name, and actually that one became the band's biggest hit. The album balances Oingo Boingo's trademark eccentricity with surprisingly polished pop sensibilities, making it both radio-friendly and beloved. Its mix of eerie imagery, danceable grooves, and Elfman's maniac vocal delivery, Dead Man's Party stands out as the defining statement of the band's career and a quintessential snapshot of the mid-80s new wave era. And the album opens up with the song Just Another Day. This song was released as a single. It reached 85 on the Billboard's Hot 100 and quickly became a fan favorite thanks to its soaring chorus, layered arrangements, and Danny Elfman's unmistakable vocal delivery. The song captures Oingo Boingo's unique sound of high-energy rock and darker lyrical themes. On the surface, it talks about the idea of an ordinary day, but beneath that, there's a sense of alienation and unease, classic Elfman territory. Musically, it blends pitchy guitars, driving horns, and atmospheric keyboards, giving the track both power and almost a cinematic feel. Mm-hmm. A memorable part of the song's legacy is its music video. Directed by Danny Elfman, with its surreal and gothic imagery, this video became a cult favorite on MTV in the mid-80s and perfectly matched the track's mood. Over the years, Just Another Day has remained one of Oingo Boingo's signature songs.
Nice. I never saw the video. Don, you see the video as a kid?
I don't remember it.
You were an MTV kid, so I thought maybe.
Yeah.
If you had, maybe you would have fallen in love with them.
Probably.
Yep.
Yeah, actually, I think the only video I remember was Weird Science.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Just Another Day is a, you know, a pretty strong opening track, you know, kind of, you know, it does, I think, set the tone for the whole album. I don't know if they're actual xylophones or if it's a synthesizer, but I saw somebody describe them as skeletal xylophones. I almost picture like a Nightmare Before Christmas dude, you know.
Right. Hitting the
Yeah, that was one thing Danny was famous for, is he does love his percussions, and those are actual xylophones.
Okay, nice. That makes it even better. Is it xylophones or like rib cages? Yeah, I mean, the title, I just kept thinking, just another day.
Yeah.
But the lyrics are simple, but there's definitely, and it starts out just with this opening track even, things beneath the surface. I mean, this is very light, like on the top, and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's what New Wave does well. Those punk underpinnings kind of gussied up with ribbons and bows and a lot of different sounds, and especially horns here, which I think that is a new addition to the New Wave sound, at least with the amount of them here, not just a touch here and there. Yeah. These carnival rhythms and quirkiness about dancing with death, and it definitely sets the vibe for the record, which a good opener. That's what it's supposed to do.
I think maybe it's the quirkiness and the fun vibe of it that probably, you know, kept me at a distance initially, because I was, you know, more into stuff that was overtly dark, like the Cure, you know. And this sounds kind of silly, but then when you listen to the lyrics, it is, you know, as dark as a Cure record.
Yeah, I think, and the name Oingo Boingo sounds fun. If it was like Oingo Cryo, you probably would have been more interested.
And here's another song on the album that really was a standout track for me, Stay. Would you stay with me one more day?
I finally forgot. He's saying, if we get through. I wasn't sure what he was saying. I thought it was like, if we get the room one more night. I thought like they get the hotel room for another night or something.
Well, yeah, I guess that would change the connotation of the song quite a bit.
Unlike the band's more upbeat or theatrical songs, Stay leans into the darker, more introspective mood, showcasing Danny Elfman's ability to balance quirky energy with genuine emotional depth. The song deals with themes of depression, longing, and emotional tension, capturing the push and pull of a troubled relationship. Musically, it highlights the band's signature blend of driving rhythm, layered keyboards, and horn accents, all wrapped around Elfman's expressive, almost pleading vocal performance. This song has also become a favorite among devoted Oingo Boingo fans for its haunted melody and emotional intensity. The track stands out as an example of the band's versatility, proving that they're beyond just their high-party anthems. Oingo Boingo can craft songs with general emotions with dark and cinematic flair.
Yeah, I like ballads that are mid-tempo.
Yeah, me too.
And that's what this is kind of a ballad, but they can't just completely sink into romantic balladry. You still have to have those little horns and all that stuff.
The song really does stand out on the album. You know, really feels more like kind of a traditional rock song.
Yeah.
The introduction, the guitar part on it actually reminded me of the Smiths a little bit, little kind of Johnny Marr style guitar there. Mm-hmm. And then his vocals on this one reminds me of, is it Andrew Partridge from XTC? Is it Andy Partridge?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, do you remember we did an XTC record not too long ago?
Yes.
Yeah.
But we haven't done a Partridge Family album, which...
No. No relation, I don't think. No. But yeah, like a quirky vocal style, which is really neat.
It's probably the most pop moment on the album. I mean, if I had heard this one at the time, because I was more of a hits kid, so like I knew new wave bands as long as they were on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I probably didn't know about them because I didn't have MTV like Richie Rich over here, Don. But Elfman's singing is surprisingly tender and like more subdued, because, you know, as we'll see throughout the rest of the album, there's a lot more kind of Pennywise vibes coming from vocally. But yeah, longing, fragile connections, and not wanting someone to leave. And I'd wonder if, did Oingo Boingo ever want mainstream pop success, Steve? Or did they want to stay on the fringes? Because this seems like they're testing the mainstream waters.
Most bands, probably their public persona, didn't want that success. But I'm sure behind the scenes, most bands want that success.
Yeah, sure. Makes sense.
And I think with Oingo Boingo, they're kind of looking at their success. They were huge on the West Coast. I know California had a huge following, even all the way out to Utah. And then they were also huge in Brazil.
Huh. Interesting. It's usually Japan is the one that people say, oh, yeah, we're huge in Japan.
And then Hasselhoff was huge in Germany. Yeah. All right. Well, let's explore another cut. Here's the title track, Dead Man's Party.
Struck by lightning, walking down the street. I was hit by something, I spied in my sleep.
God's face. I think he's fallen in love.
I feel like I'm at a Halloween party. I love it. This song originated from, I guess, a spontaneous interaction with a DMX. With DMX. Just kidding.
What?
X don't give it to you.
Yeah, it's not DMX the rapper. It's the drum machine, you know, which was, you know, very big at the time. But I think Elfman was showing his daughter Lola, you know, how to use the drum machine, and they ended up, you know, kind of working together on it and created a rhythm track, and that, you know, led its way to you know, becoming Dead Man's Party. Yeah, I mean, it's another one of those that it's got sort of the goth thing, you know, like, I mean, it's dealing with, you know, kind of death and, you know, monsters and stuff, but it's the campy side of things.
Right.
But yeah, you know, but unlike goth and, you know, some aspects of metal, it's like, it's fun and lightweight, at least the treatment of it.
But it's creepy.
Yes.
And it's kind of creepier because it's like, this guy's so comfortable with it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's a good point.
You don't want to say Danny Elfman three times is all I'm saying. You know what I mean?
Well, dude, you say it's creepy, and it could be cut. Part of the song was inspired by Danny Elfman's experience that he had while staying at a hotel in Salt Lake City that was known for its haunted atmosphere. He recalled being at the bar where the atmosphere was festive, but yet eerie. It was full of strangers celebrating, and it kind of reminded of him the idea of a party where the living and the dead mingle.
Well, that would do it. So he captured it well. I mean, and of course, to add to the fun, their performance in Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
I did actually recently see that, and I was like, oh, that's what Oingo Boingo looks like.
Nice. So, dude, was there a track you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, so I picked the fairly creepy and forward-thinking song, No One Lives Forever.
I'm so happy dancing while the grimory cuts, 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 but he can't get me.
Hey, Dan, Jack Skellington called. He wants his soundtrack back. I mean, when I was listening to this record, and of course I knew that Elfman went on to do, you know, Beetlejuice and Tim Burton movies and all sorts of stuff and the Simpsons theme song, but it just really hit me of that this guy was building this sound without, you know, it wasn't to be a movie music making dude, it was with his band, but it's just so ingrained in the style of this group and the way that they performed and use all those traditional sounds that and make it eerie without, you know, the Dracula organ or anything like that. They used all the new wave elements and found a way for it to have a spooky undercurrent. Very cool. Like a gothic circus or a carny vibe to it. I mean, I think it just fits perfectly into the album's obsession with mortality. And this is sort of like dancing on the edge of life and death. What do you guys think about this one?
Yeah, dude, you're right. I love how it blends that upbeat, danceable rhythms with morbidly ironic lyrics about the inevitability of death, showcasing again Danny Elfman's theatrical vocals and sharp wit. This song is a great song to jump into as it features signatures from the band. Their punchy horns, driving guitars, layered keyboards, creating a sound that's very lively that really contrasts with this grim subject matter. It's the perfect mix of fun and macabre that defines Oingo Boingo.
Yeah, and it, again, I picture a Halloween party again. I feel like Elvira's there. You know, again, it's kind of like the silly edge of horror.
Does her cup of wine or whatever have like the foggy smoke coming out of it? Yeah. So it looks like a potion. Yeah.
Yeah. But it has the, you know, kind of the you only live once, right? So just, you know, just push the partying right to the edge.
Yeah. I like the wolf references and stuff to it, all just perfectly Halloween-y without being, you know, without having someone going, ow, in the background. what I kept picturing, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this. You ever see the skeleton dance at Disney short from 1939?
Yes.
And I know the music is very different in that, but I just kept picturing that movement, you know, a bunch of skeletons dancing in black and white graveyard.
I think they do the xylophone thing in that too.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Now I've been outed for my joke earlier where it seemed like I was very clever. I wasn't.
And then to close out the album is the song Weird Science.
Now, was he talking about the Goo Goo Dolls in there? Sounded like it to me.
This song became Boingo Boingo's probably biggest hit, and it's one that Danny Elfman wrote in a burst of inspiration for the movie Weird Science while he was stuck in traffic, scribbling lyrics and melodies on scraps of paper as he drove home. To me, this track really captures the band's quirky, energetic, and electric style, featuring again driving guitars, punchy horns, those layer synthesizers, and Elfman's vocals. Despite its success, however, the band really has had mixed feelings on this song, I found out, which they felt was kind of maybe leaned into more towards the movie tie-in. Some other things I found out about it is, from what I've heard, is the band really didn't like the take of the song that was used on the album, as they felt it was rushed and thought they were going to get another take at it. And it's one that, surprisingly, the band really didn't embrace or lean into when the live sets back in the day in the late 80s and early 90s. And it also could be the fact that the music video was the only one that the band did not have any creative control over. And Elfman hated it. In fact, so much that he saw it airing on Beavis and Butthead, if you remember that from MTV, how they were mocking it, and really kind of was embarrassed for that, for the video. But the song has become really a cult favorite, and that's one of the songs most associated with Oingo Boingo's legacy, again showing their ability to craft infectious, high-energy music, even if it wasn't completely in line with their artistic vision.
Listening to it now, like I found more that I like about it. There's actually guitar in there that is actually pretty impressive. I do think, I feel like it should have just been a standalone single, or it should have, you know, just lived on the Weird Science soundtrack. I'm not sure that it's a great closer for this album.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't feel like there's as much below the surface lyrically or anything, you know, like the other tracks.
It's about creation, right? And the rest of the album's about death. So maybe it is an appropriate closer because it's juxtaposing to, you know, it's all death and, you know, nothing lasts forever. Just live it up. And then maybe there's also an opportunity in life for creation of a human being from a Barbie doll and an exciting adventure of teenagers.
Good point.
But I like it. I mean, it's lyrically certainly not as dense as some of the other albums or songs, but the way the horns are just has that Motown-y fun to it somehow, and it's just a different kind of fun, but I think it's fun nonetheless.
Yeah, and they give you time to dance because it's about 6 minutes, on the album. I think I assume the single version was maybe a little bit shorter, and I think there's a dance version out there that's probably longer.
Jeez. Yeah. I mean, in dancing to this for 6 minutes, I'm not sure about that. I mean, maybe on American Bandstand or something there that was happening.
Solid gold.
Yeah. So that one did go number 45 on the Billboard Hot 100. So definitely, as Steve was talking about, biggest hit. And maybe without that, this record wouldn't have sold and then had people accidentally fall in love with the songs, you know?
That's true. So we've gone through five of the cuts from the album. Let's rewind and reflect on the album as a whole. All right, Steve. So this is, you know, when we talk about, you know, the overall vibe of the album.
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
The overall vibe on this album for me is one that's a solid album from start to finish. Really, I'd say with no filler tracks. Even some of the lesser known tracks like Help Me comes to mind. That one's more kind of has that feel of maybe like even just going to like a new wave revival with kind of the chorus and the headlines and the punchy upbeat tempo. It's an album to me that really sucked me in and brought me not only into the world of New Wave, but really into the band of Oingo Boingo. Like I said, probably Weird Science is my least favorite track. It's still very enjoyable. It just kind of feels a little off to close the album as a theme. But for me, this is a solid album from start to finish.
Yeah, so it's our tradition around here to each provide a clickbait headline. Did you have one?
Yeah, my clickbait headline on this would be how one album turned Oingo Boingo into Halloween heroes.
Ooh, Halloween heroes.
Yeah, that's good.
That sounds like a series of movies that people would love to go watch. Yeah. Like the Monster Squad.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, I'll give you mine. Album Nerd is struck by lightning and joins the Dead Man's Party.
He's alive.
So, I mean, despite kind of being the new wave guy on the show, Oingo Boingo, you know, is not an artist that I've ever really been drawn to. I think maybe just kind of the campiness of it, like to me from afar, it felt more like a novelty thing. But now, you know, having spent a lot of time with the album, you know, I know there's a lot more to it. And, you know, I mean, I think the compositions are great. The musicianship is good. And, you know, I mean, lyrically, there's more to it than, you know, skeletons and death.
Yeah. Yep. So I guess I'll throw in my clickbait headline to describe Dead Man's Party. The album that made Skeletons Dance and launched Danny Elfman's film scoring empire. I haven't listened to the other records, and Steve would be better equipped to answer this, but does this album have more of the elements that were later used in the scoring and movie soundtrack stuff? Or does that exist throughout all of them?
Really, I think it's against their whole album catalog. You're going to hear it in the early albums to probably a couple albums down the line. You're going to still hear that thematic, cinematic sound that you really kind of, you're going to hear in Elfman's work today.
Okay, cool.
So, I mean, it is like within the new wave realm. I mean, there's so many other like kind of parallel genres or subgenres. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely a lot of ska on this album.
I was going to mention, I am a serial ska hater for the most part. I can't stand that. But this is just the right amount.
Well, they don't use any ska puns or anything, right, which I know those drive you crazy.
Yeah.
It's a ska-ry album.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, it's just the right amount of that sound and that guitar riff and the kind of jump that you feel, you know, jumping up and down to the songs, oingo boingoing, as I may call it. But yeah, I like that in there. And I think that is definitely part of what gives it a good overall vibe.
With our killer to filler ratio, I mean, Steve already mentioned, like, I really like the Help Me track.
Yep.
Fool's Paradise, you know, is good as well. You know, Weird Science to me might be the weakest track, and that's
yes,
and it's a great track, as Steve said.
I liked Heard Somebody Cry quite a bit. It's a nervous energy, kind of Devo with horns to me. I heard a little Devo in there, at least that was my impression. I'm no expert. Elfman is a better singer than I expected. There's little affectations and things, like they aren't straight up hoos all the time. There's also just these parts where he goes falsetto for a second, and I did enjoy that. Same man I was before, I really enjoyed as well. Very little here feels like dead weight, and just as some songs don't hit as hard, and maybe Weird Science just hits differently. I think it's a different flavor. So, but yeah, it does carry that Boingo DNA.
Yeah. And then, you know, with production, so, I guess it was co-produced by Danny Elfman and Steve Bartik. So Bartik, I think he was the guitarist, right, Steve?
Yes.
But he's also somebody who's gone on to continue with working with Elfman in his film career.
Yeah, he was Danny's guitarist, and he still works with Elfman today. And with his live shows, he's his orchestra conductor and still comes out and plays with him on Danny's last couple tours, on his Big Mess tours.
Cool. And would you say the production on this is a little more commercial and poppy than the previous albums?
I would say this one's probably is their most commercial album, I guess, or most commercial friendly album to get the average listener pulled in. Kind of sounds like Oingo Boingo maybe pulled Dude into the world of Oingo Boingo with this album. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see his thoughts as he goes through the catalog.
Yeah, I definitely will have to address that. So I do look forward to that. But this one, I mean, I haven't heard the others, but this does have a 1980s sheen to it for sure. But it's a good balance. I think the production is a good balance of rock band rawness and studio experimentation and cleanliness. And it doesn't ever feel muddy. The synths and guitars are real crisp, which I think is nice for this particular sound. Yeah, it's theatrical composed, which makes sense. And they're almost kind of like little mini movies. With every song, I think we're talking about what we are picturing. And I think that says a lot about the composition and the production.
And then, you know, replay value. Well, Steve, I assume this is one you've listened to a lot.
Thousands of times.
Yeah, for me, this is high replay. It's not my favorite Oingo Boingo album, but it's a very solid album by the band.
What is your favorite?
What is my favorite? I've actually got two. One of the earlier works, Good for Your Soul, and one of the later works that came afterwards that I didn't appreciate at the time, but it's really grown on me, and that's Dark at the End of the Tunnel.
Okay, I'll start with those.
And yeah, this is, I mean, this is mostly new to me. And so I, you know, I'm excited to have another band. It's also going to be, you know, a good October record. I don't want to just relegate it to, you know, kind of Halloween right. status, because I think it goes beyond that. But, you know, it's different from goth music, as I said before. You know, it's a sort of a happier vibe or something, you know, but it still has, yeah, the macabre vibe, which I like.
So I think I made it clear I'm in replayable for sure. I'm just interested in their take on new wave and how they were adding elements to a, you know, in quotes, genre that started off as post-punk and just kept adding layers. And I'm really fascinated with the layers they seem to be adding.
All right. And then we'll start with Steve, I guess, with Legacy. What do you think the legacy is of this album?
To me, the legacy of this album is the theming, the Dead Man's Party theming. Oingo Boingo famously puts on epic Halloween shows in California, and they also toured the West on those. And it was one that a staple that I looked forward to seeing every fall, seeing them play live. You also definitely get a feel for Elfman's love of percussions that would later help define his orchestral sound for decades to come.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I think I agree with all that. I mean, I guess you could look at New Wave as kind of having two sources, right? So, I mean, so much of it is coming from Britain. And then you have like this American version, which I guess probably started, you know, goes back to CBGB's with Blondie and, yeah. you know, the Talking Heads and, you know, maybe the Cars. But yeah, so, I mean, I guess this is a uniquely American version of New Wave music.
Yeah. I mean, I would have guessed British just because that's where I expect new wave music to come from, you know, largely, not all of it, but, you know, like your Thompson Twins and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think you said it best. This just added another layer onto that new wave genre.
Yeah. Legacy wise, they stuck to who they were. They didn't kowtow to trends. They didn't get wacky haircuts and go on the cover of Teen Beat magazine or whatever. They were just doing their thing and kind of living their performance art, which is what this is, and I really appreciate that.
Well, to me, this album is an example of new wave and how you can always just keep adding on. It takes what we've experienced from the British, and I think Oingo Boingo did their own spin on it. They got their thematical elements into the mix, and like the line says on Dead Man's Party, leave your body and soul at the door. Leave yeah. your music soul at the door, and you're gonna just soak in so much.
Awesome.
Excuse me, I'd like to ask you a few questions.
It's time again for Deep Questions by Don. Just going to warn you, Steve, we go really deep, so look out. So what new wave-inspired fashion choices have you made at any point in your life, dude?
Well, I mean, the only one that's like overt that I went and purchased with my paper route money, which kids used to do. They were left alone in neighborhoods to deliver newspapers to strangers' homes. Yeah, newspapers. I got some shutter shades, which are those sunglasses that absolutely do nothing to protect your eyes from the sun. They just look like blinds on your windows. Mine didn't even close. They just were open. So you're just looking through a bunch of slits and you can't see very well, but they looked like something, you know, new wave people might wear. Yeah. Probably, you know, I may have seen a video or two on Friday Night Videos. But I also tried spiking my hair with Aquanet.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wasn't trying for like a flock of seagulls or anything like that, but I was trying to make my hair look punky or something, maybe a Billy Idol kind of thing.
Nice.
What about you, Don?
Well, I don't think they're a new wave, but I did have, remember the giant sunglasses? I'm not sure that those were new wave.
I wouldn't say they were new wave. They were more prop comic vibe. Right. But
yeah. Well, you know, again, I guess I'm failing as the new wave guy on the show because, you know, I didn't really, you know, my mom dressed me.
Yeah, you were wearing Oshkosh Bagosh or whatever.
Yeah. But I do remember getting like a leather spike bracelet, which I think is probably more punk or bikery, or I don't even know like what it was, but it was right next to Boy George's hat and Michael Jackson's glove at JCPenney. Yeah. So
I made my own Michael Jackson glove with one of my mom's old dress gloves. I just glued a bunch of glitter on it. And
nice.
Yeah.
You still wear it today.
I'm wearing it right now.
How about you, Steve?
Probably my new wave inspired fashion choice would have to be when I got into wearing the combat boots that later morphed into Doc Martens.
Right. Yeah. Yes. I wanted those so bad. My budget was tight and I chose poorly.
I think I ended up selling off some of my Nintendo collection to get my Doc Martens.
Wow. Nice. Yeah, they weren't cheap.
Yeah. But they do last forever.
I was just remembering, it probably wasn't really New Wave, but do you remember like the jackets that just had like a million zippers on them?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Never had one of those. I wanted the Michael Jackson jacket. Never got
the Beat It one?
No, the Thriller one.
Wanted the Thriller one with those giant shoulders.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, what New Wave inspired fashion choices have you made over the years? Let us know on our social media like Instagram and Facebook at Album Nerds.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
So, on our way home from the dead man's party, did you have a chance to listen and dig anything else?
I mean, I actually had more time to listen and dig other things because we were doing one album and we, you know, Steve graciously chose it very early for us, so we had lots of time. I decided to stay in the new wave realm from my personal vinyl collection, and I went with Joe Jackson. And this is kind of, you know, is it post-punk? Is it new wave? It's got a little bit of both. Look Sharp. I've got the vinyl LP. It's the Pitman pressing, if that matters to anybody. So an old copy. Joe Jackson's a British singer, songwriter, and musician known for that eclectic style. It's got some new wave, little jazz, little classical, little pop. He's from England, and his work is sort of characterized by sharp lyrics and a lot of experimentation, I guess, within that realm. So not quite as wacky as Oingo Boingo, but more of a gentleman's experimentation. So why don't we listen to a little bit of the one that you've probably heard, Is She Really Going Out With Him?
Is she really going out with him?
I heard that song first, I believe, in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which is what piqued my interest.
Awesome.
It was released January 29th, 1979. His debut studio album, a mix of new wave, punk, reggae influences, and it's witty and versatile. What are you guys' impressions of this one? Is this something on your radar?
It's interesting. I suck at new wave. I obviously know this song and some of the others, but I've never really spent time with a Joe Jackson album, so I'll add that to my list as well.
So, Steve, is this new wave? Like,
yeah, Joe Jackson, definitely new wave. He's still, I think, adding different layers to the genre. I really enjoyed this album. Huge fan of Joe Jackson's. Happy that you picked that one.
Haha, more new wave than you are, Don.
You are. All right. Well, I picked one from my comfort zone, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, or OMD. They are reissuing their 1985 album, Crush. It's coming out on October 10th. It's remastered, I guess newly mixed by Paul Humphreys. It's got a bunch of unreleased tracks from the original album sessions. They've already dropped a couple. Drift, which was a B-side to Secret. And then this song here, Coral, I don't think has been heard before.
Yeah, it sounds like that.
Yeah. Yeah, Crush is a really interesting album for OMD. It's really when they broke through in the United States. The song So In Love and then also Secret, you know, were, you know, kind of minor hits. But it's kind of experimental in some ways as well. It seems like they're trying to incorporate more rootsy or American sounds or rock sounds. Yeah, it's an odd album. Is that one you like, Steve?
Yeah, I do like Crush, but I've never heard the song Coral, so I'm really happy to give me some exposure to that one. It's definitely going to have to check that out when it comes out.
All right. What are you digging, Steve?
What I'm digging is an album by a newer new wave artist, Julian Shaw Taylor. He just describes himself perfectly as a mix between David Bowie, Robert Smith, with just a little bit of Prince mixed into the mix.
Ooh. Oh my God. Something for everybody on the list.
Yeah. His album Elysium was one of my favorite albums back. It was released back in October of 2022. Elysium is a deeply personal concept album. It chronicles the emotional journey of falling in love, from the instant connection to overcoming distance and the complexities that follow. He also has some staples in the new wave genre helping him out with this album. David J from Bauhaus and Rebel and Love and Rockets contributed bass on a lot of the tracks.
Nice.
Sonically, the album blends the 1980s new wave, synth rock, and post-punk elements with modern electro production. And the song that really stands out to me is Secret.
I've got no regret.
So, Don, did you say that there was a song Secret on the OMD album too?
Yep, okay. That is true. Huh?
It's not the same song.
It is not.
Okay. Cool.
All right. So what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky. Also, don't forget to dig on some other music podcasts, like coincidentally, the New Wave Music Podcast. Steve, thanks again for joining us on the Album Nerds. The New Wave Music Podcast is a great show. I'm your biggest fan, but you can find that anywhere you find podcasts, and you've got the social media as well at New Wave Music Podcast.
Well, thanks, Don and Dude, for having me on here. It's been a great time hanging out with the Album Nerds, and Don, the restraining order may or may not be coming in the mail.
That's a wise choice.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Here we are once again. It's that time on the show when I'm reminded of the words of Debbie Harry of Blondie. This happens to me a lot, believe it or not. And I quote, "I think New Wave looked like what would happen if the Jetsons went shopping at Goodwill." All right. Well, with that in mind, let's bring out that beautiful wheel of musical discovery to see what we'll be discovering next time.
Next time, we're diving into compilation albums, but not the greatest hits. From tributes and cover collections to rarities and oddities, these records stir controversy, challenge what defines an album, and add unexpected twists to music history.
So compilation albums, kind of forbidden fruit in the in the album fan, you know, journey.
Andy would be rolling over in his grave if he was dead.
No, luckily he's not. He just had other stuff to do. And you never know. He could be back. But yeah, I used to love those compilation records of, you know, tribute albums and, you know, hearing my favorite bands do other people's music or B-sides, that kind of stuff, when they put those compilations together. So that should be fun.
Now that's what I call music and all those.
Yeah, that would make it easy, but horrifying at the same time. We'll do better than that.
All right. Well, what's your favorite compilation album? What else are you listening to? Email us at podcast@albumnerds.com or follow us on Instagram and other social media at Album Nerds. And visit albumnerds.com to listen to all 306 episodes. And the best way to support the show is to share it. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you once again for joining us here on the Album Nerds Podcast. We'll catch you next time with some mind-blowing compilations.
From our records and our words, why don't people understand Album Nerds?
I like that.
You wanted it to rhyme, so it did rhyme. Yeah. Words and nerds.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Thanks again, Steve.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Steve. And we'll see all of you next time.